Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. Many in America attempt to fight against one issue or another as they try to understand what is happening in their country, but most fail to see the whole picture and are being crushed under a well-organized divide-and-conquer tactic that keeps them reeling from crisis to crisis. America is drowning in a sea of rules and regulations. We all know something is very wrong, and we're trying to fix it. Our guest today is Tom DeWeese. Tom is the founder and president of the Virginia-based American Policy Center. He is the editor-in-chief of the DeWeese Report, a writer, a publisher, a businessman, a grassroots activist, a regular on radio and television shows, a national and international speaker on the prevention of private property rights and against intrusive environmental regulations. He's a firm believer in protecting constitutionally guaranteed rights of property and individual freedoms. And right now, I think he's a very hungry dude, but Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Sue.
Tom, I have to tell you, this morning I got an email from my sister, and she said, be the kind of woman that when your feet hit the floor each morning, the devil says, oh, poop, she's up. I think that you are the kind of man who, when you walk into a room, every elected and non-elected government dictator says, oh, poop, he's here.
The experience that I've had recently is when I get up to speak, they clear the room. So, they run.
Gee, I wonder why.
Well, I just point out a couple of things that I thought they might be interested in.
Well, you've started quite a firestorm in your own words. And you wrote an article. And what I did was I'd seen parts of it and I'd read parts of it, but I went online and just Googled the wrenching transformation of America and came up with the whole thing, which I read. Tom, when we talked yesterday, you said this would be sort of, it would parallel what's going on in HOAs. It's almost identical to what's going on in HOAs on a bigger scale, though.
Well, I think, and that's what we've been saying for about 15 years. This is a blueprint for everything, and you will find the exact same blueprint on the education front and what's happening in the schools and all that transformation there. It all comes from these UN documents, Agenda 21 particularly, the Biodiversity Treaty, another one, and the way that they're implementing this step by step is on the local level, and homeowners associations are most certainly a major tool in that arsenal.
So I guess if they can get into your home and start regulating you from within, the rest is just a piece of cake.
Yeah, I mean, you have all these levels of government, and of course the one that affects you the most is the one that's closest to you. And if they could start off with a few little regulations here, has to do with how you keep your yard, how you what kind of materials you use in building your home or working on your home and that sort of thing. All those kind of things enter into this, and it's all part of the same agenda.
You've been out there talking about this to a lot of people. How has it been received? What's the reaction? The typical reaction of people. Do they go, oh, so that's what's happening? Or do they just look at you blankly as if, you've grown a second head or something?
What used to happen when we first started talking about it about 15 years ago is that people looked at us, their eyes rolled back in their head, and they said, what's for lunch? And, they had no idea what we were talking about. Today, that has completely changed. This particular speech I gave in two places, Kalispell, Montana, and Spokane, Washington, had a huge effect in both places, but particularly Spokane. 350 people there to hear me speak. And as I said, this was a Republican dinner. It was a Lincoln Day dinner. And all the Republican elected officials were there, the county commissioners and the city council and the state reps and all that, glad-handing everybody up on stage, talking about Republican principles of limited government and those darn Democrats and what they're doing and on and on and on. And then as I got up to speak, they left. And 350 people that were left stayed there and listened to every word I said. And it was like you could hear the bells going off all around, recognition. Oh, that's what it is. And one of the major things I talked about was not only what was being done, but how it was being done and who is doing it, who's behind the scenes. And not to get ahead of ourselves here, but I talked about a group called ICLEI. They used to be called the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ICLEI. Now they just call themselves ICLEI Local Governments for Sustainability. This is an international organization that goes into a community and basically gets, gets control of the government. The government pays them dues. They create websites and all kinds of software and training for employees, and they set the visioning of how the community is going to be set up and so forth. And they do it all for the community. And one of the things I said, Spokane is a major jewel in the ICLEI crown. They want Spokane in the worst way. They have been there for several years. And I told the people in Spokane that ICLEI was in their town. And people left the speech on Saturday night and hightailed it to city council on Monday night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they started asking all these questions. Is ICLEI here? The mayor of Spokane, who's a Democrat, literally confirmed everything I said was true, that she had gone to these international conferences sponsored by ICLEI and the United Nations, that she had signed on to meeting certain standards according to UN documents, and that ICLEI was very much involved in the community and they were paying dues to them. It just so happens that that night, it was just a coincidence, but that night, ICLEI had been working for 2 years on a report that would be a guiding document for Spokane government to implement all of these dire environmental policies. And that night they introduced it. And such an uproar happened because of these people who went down there that they had to table it. They still haven't voted on it. It's been over a month now. And so, you know, this is the impact that it's had.
Wow, that's impressive. But, you know, I was reading all of this, and, of course, you talk a lot about the green agenda, and everywhere you look, it's green, 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 green. But, Tom, I couldn't help but notice that a lot of this greening stuff, when you've got the associations, it sort of goes counter to everything they're doing. So it would seem to me that one hand really doesn't know what the other's doing, or is it just designed to confuse people? I'll give you an example. You talk, and I'd like to get back to that at a certain point where I want you to go into a little more detail and talk about the water consumption. Yet in associations, they will have a requirement that you have some very thirsty grass and that the grass be watered. You cannot have brown spots. At the same time, the city may be experiencing a drought and there's a ban on watering lawns and wasting water. And you have, you know, you're sort of caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, if you will. You're fined if you don't water your lawn and wash your car and hose down your mailbox and remove the dust off your roof by your HOA, and then you're fined by the local government if you do.
Yeah. I think that you've got a situation. It, you know, there are people always asking me, you know, what is the answer to all this and who exactly is behind it all and what exactly is their agenda and what exactly do they get out of it all. And the truth of the matter is that there are a lot of different things being done here, and sometimes they ride piggyback on each other, and sometimes they fight. And they're not all totally on the same page. And I would venture to say that in situations like you're talking about in the homeowners associations, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but in this particular case, you have the neat-nick Nazis who want the thing to look exactly, you know, they want the grass to be exactly the right heights and all that sort of thing, are clashing with this international agenda, you know, which wants to control water and how much we use. And those, that means those guys aren't on the same page. It's just one Nazi fighting the other one.
Well, I just see the whole thing as part of the big picture. Everything, it's like those Russian dolls. You remember, you sort of take the little one and you put it in a slightly bigger one and you put it in. And I think associations are kind of in the middle of all of that someplace. They're part of the big doll.
Oh, there's no question there. I think that is absolutely true 99% of the time. But I think that extra 1% is where, you know, go off on the deep end because, you know, as we just described.
So what else is going on in your world? Put us in the big picture, Tom.
Well, first of all here, and as I ask in the speech, the question I ask was about climate change. All of this, all of it is being implemented by the excuse of global warming, climate change, that we've got to save the planet. And I started out by asking the question, if none of that is true, if it can be proven that global warming, man-made global warming, does not exist, would your elected officials who are supporting legislation because of that now be relieved, now be happy to know that they're off the hook, the world has dodged a big one, it isn't true, and so we don't have to implement all this kind of stuff, we can go back to restoring the republic? Are they happy about, would they be happy about that, and what would their reaction be? Would they continue to put these kind of things in place anyway? And I said the answer to that question then tells you the answer to what their agenda truly is, because the evidence is mounting in massive piles that man-made global warming is not a threat, does not exist, and scientists are coming out of the woodwork across the world to say that they are now skeptics to this whole thing, that it is probably the biggest scam ever perpetrated on the human race. And, you know, that's what the science is beginning to show. In fact, we're going into a cooling period, not a warming period. And so you ask this question of these elected officials. What is their position knowing that, knowing at least this, that there is no consensus? There may be a debate, but there is no consensus, and so it's not necessary that we put all these things in place. And what we find is that they're moving forward anyway, and the reason is it had nothing to do with global warming or the environment. It has to do with a socialistic, fascistic control of the economy and of everything we think, do, and say, of our property, of our children, of the kind of the size of families we can have, on and on and on. That's what's really at the root of all this stuff. And it does. And global warming was the excuse. And even though you can prove it doesn't exist, they don't care. They move forward.
It's not just the government; it's the people. I mean, I've had a number of discussions with just ordinary folks like you and me, basically. Not like you, but like me. And I say, oh, you know, global warming, that's a hoax. And they go, oh, no, it's true. I go, well, I mean, look at the weather. It's cold. What do you mean global warming? And they go, oh, that's just part of global warming.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is. It's just part of global warming.
Yeah. They very cleverly changed it from global warming to climate change. So that could fit anything.
Yeah, you're right.
You're right. But, you know, look at the world that the average person lives in. You've got a president who is telling us that the science is determined. Of course, you've got Al Gore. You've got major members of Congress. You've got local elected officials. You've got state elected officials. You've got the news media. And now you've got corporations everywhere you turn. Go green, go green, go green. This will cut back on climate change. This will all this. The whole matrix is under the control of this lie, this propaganda, and now you have this little band of skeptics who are beginning to grow, but they are outside of this mainstream media, and their message is not getting out. All you would have to do is have 60 Minutes one time do a major report with the skeptics without tainting it and letting them tell their story, and this thing would begin to turn around. But you've got General Electric, you've got Monsanto, you've got major, major corporations who have bought into this, who have put major bucks into this new green economy, and they're not going to let a little inconvenient scientific truth get in their way moving forward with it. And so it's just, but what they're doing is they're running on the inertia from over 10 years of lies and propaganda. And even though now there is nothing to fuel it, because there is no scientific proof of global warming, they're running on that inertia, but eventually that has to run out because it's an absolute lie.
You know, it's pervasive. It's in the stuff you buy for your house. It's, you know, grocery bags. You go to the grocery store. It's go green, you know, buy a usable bag so that you can bring it. We'll give you 2 pennies for every bag you return, or whatever it is they're doing. Whole Foods, we do not give out plastic bags anymore. We're green. We're going to, you know, all of this nonsense. What are you going to put your garbage in?
Here, Whole Foods is one of the worst in spreading the sustainablest propaganda. And they're selling it. What makes me so angry about it is they've combined the organic food industry, and buying local and all that into one agenda. And it's not one agenda. I particularly like to buy local foods, and I like to buy more organic things because I don't like the chemicals that are in the foods and so forth. But that is a different issue.
Yeah, it is.
And they're putting it all together, and it's all under this sustainablest umbrella. Sustainable development is a mixture, a weird mixture between socialism and fascism. Now, what do I mean by that? First of all, it is a top-down control. It is setting up regional governments and councils that are elected by no one, that are dictating to your elected officials what their policies will be. And this is how ICLEI comes in. We'll explain that in a minute.
Okay.
And this has to do not just – the environment is the excuse. We're talking about getting hold of the economy. We're talking about getting hold of our social society, all living under this politically correct, environmentally correct world where they control your farms. They control your property. They control your what your children are taught in schools. They control what the population can be. You have things like smart growth. We all heard this title, this term. What that means is they draw a wall around your city, and they say you will not move outside of that. That's urban sprawl. And so then you have a limited amount of room where if the population continues to expand there, people can't live there, so they've got to cut the population, which means forced abortions. It means limitations on how many children you can have. You want to see how that works? Go to China. They're really good at it. That's what that means. The fascism part comes in with global corporations who are in partnership. You've heard the term public-private partnerships, and there are a lot of organizations that are freedom organizations, Cato, Reason, Heritage, that are pushing public-private partnerships as free enterprise. They push it as, this will keep our tax dollars down. This is, we'll have the global corporations come in and pay to improve the roads, to build water treatment systems, that sort of thing, and you won't have your tax dollars paying for it. What they really are saying is they're creating a partnership between government and business, which creates a special sect of business that has special privileges. These are government-sanctioned monopolies. And now they have the ability to have no competition. They have no compete clauses in their agreements. They have comprehensive development agreements, CDAs, which guarantee them a return on their investment. And that means they can charge whatever they want. They can put little businesses out of business because they take it over. In order to meet their CDA. This is not free enterprise. And we're in a pitch battle over this with these other groups who say that it is. This gets into the Trans-Texas Corridor and the whole North American Union issue and all that. But all of this falls under the label of sustainable development. And as I said, it is a weird mixture between socialism and fascism that is creating a not-so-perfect world of people controlled, people, you know, the government making decisions, having to ask the government for permission to do anything in your home, and this gets us into the homeowners associations where all these rules and regulations become the norm, and your property is no longer yours.
You know, that's what really scares me, Tom, because people are accepting it. There's no question. You know, it's oh, there's a homeowners association. What are the fees? That's all they're worried about. What is it going to cost me on a monthly basis? Nobody says, wait a minute, you can't tell me what color to paint my front door. You can't tell me what, how big my dog can be. You can't tell me whether I have a, you know, a dusty mailbox or not. And, you know, now they're all going belly up, or a lot of them are going belly up, and do you know what they're doing? They're fining people. They're fining their members to make up the difference.
Well, this, you know, this, we talked about that yesterday. This is the same thing that local communities are doing now that we have this economic downturn and we have, and everybody's in crisis. Government is not your friend. This is the thing we've got to make people understand.
Yeah.
In a time of crisis, what does government do? It raises your taxes, it raises your property taxes, and they put more police out in speed traps to catch you.
That's right.
Going a mile an hour over the speed limit because they need the revenue. This is government as your worst enemy, and doing it in a homeowners association is the same thing.
did you read the article? Do you know that Fairfax County, a lot of municipal governments have decided to resort to the cameras so they can catch you?
Yes. Yeah.
And there was a study done, I think, in Georgia where they said if they extended the orange light by 1 second, the number of people who ran the red light diminished by some phenomenal number, like 80%. While Fairfax County, God bless them, has decided in all their brilliance that they're going to make up some of the shortfall revenue by installing all these cameras. And what have they done, Tom? They have reduced the orange light by 3 seconds. This has nothing to do with safety, and most of the accidents happen at streetlights. I mean, that's a fact.
Sure.
So by reducing it, not only have they increased their chances of getting more fines out of you, but they've also increased your chances of having an accident.
Yeah. They've made, the government is being transformed under sustainable development. I want to make that very clear. Your government is being transformed into what was once a representative government that was friendly, that was something you could go down and talk to your local commissioner or councilman. The policeman on the street was your friend. It is turning into a dictatorship where these guys do not care a whit about you, your problems, or anything else. It is the overall agenda that they're going to put in place. And one of the things I said to the folks in Spokane, this is when the county commissioner got up and left saying I'd revealed too much.
Openness and sunshine, right?
Yes, right. What I said was that if you, a lot of activists will come to me and say, Tom, we've gone down and we've waved our signs, we wrote letters, we made phone calls, but it doesn't matter, they won't listen. Yep, that's true. And it doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican, once they're in there, they're the same ilk as this crap begins to be put in place. What you have to do is stop accepting the idea that you have to accept those elected officials. Get rid of them, pull them out by their rotted roots, and get people who are, our kind of people who believe that government is only there as a necessity for certain things, and the rest of life is about you living your life.
You know, you're saying in a different set of words what I've been saying. The power is with the people. They just are too afraid of exercising that power.
Yep. And these folks that went down to city council in Spokane were intimidated. The mayor was sitting behind the lady who actually had brought me to Spokane, and she was the leader of this group, sitting back there making comments, trying to shut her up. Didn't want her to say anything.
Right.
Of course, you get these consensus meetings. We used to have a government where it was run by Robert's Rules of Order, where everybody had a chance to speak. There was debate, and then people voted after the debate, and two sides were told. And people at city council meetings were given a chance to get up and speak because these were their representatives up there. Today they are little tin horn dictators in minor Soviets. That's what they're turning these communities into, is a Soviet, where non-elected commissions are deciding, where there is no debate, there is no discussion. A professional facilitator who uses psychological tactics to bring the audience to the position that they predetermined in the beginning, and anybody who rejected that was ridiculed and pretty much thrown out of the door and made to look like they were just troublemakers. This is how it's run now. This is thuggery. This is government by thuggery, and the people have allowed this to happen because they didn't go to city council, because they are intimidated by these people, and we ought to throw them out on their ear. And I'll tell you what, if you could take one or two of those guys and make an example of them, of these elected officials, the rest of them would change their tune pretty darn quick, because they don't want that to happen to them either. They're rats. You take the rock off of them, they're bugs that run off in different directions. They're cowards and they're thugs.
One of these days, Tom, you're going to learn how to not be so shy and speak your mind.
I am at it with these guys, because they treat Americans, good, honest Americans who are just trying to live their life, they treat them like cattle and with disdain, and I am sick of it.
We're talking to Tom DeWeese. I'm not going to go through all of his credentials again, but Tom is the founder and the president of the Virginia-based American Policy Center, and your website is AmericanPolicy.org, right?
That's correct, yep.
Go check it out. Tom, I'm laughing, but part of me is really as ticked off as you are. And that's when last year we went down to Richmond and testified against some really, really bad legislation that unfortunately passed. And that little bug that you were talking about that was under the rock, slimy and yuck, was chairing one of the subcommittees that we attended. And he would not, I mean, you talk about debate and open government and all that. He would not let us testify. He put the thing to a vote before he opened the floor up. He left he knew we were there. He knew we wanted to testify. He left that bill till the very, very end, ran through everything else. Every other bill, anyone here want to comment about it? He brought up all the experts, until he got to our bill, he brought up all the experts, then put it to a vote and said, that's it, it passes. And I said, wait a minute. He says, oh, did you want to talk? Well, of course, by then it had been, you know, it was a done deal.
Yeah, they know exactly how to do that. I've watched them. I testified against a bill in Ohio back in the 1970s. And it had to be a bill that dealt with labor unions, public policy labor union, or public labor unions. And they put the head of the committee was the head of a labor union. You can imagine what he did with us. So, you know, that's the tactic that they've done for years. And they know how to do it. They have total disdain for the voters. And, you know, people who show up and try to testify, they rob them of their constitutional rights to do that. And these people need to be ripped out by their rotted roots and thrown in the street. And if we still had the public stocks, it wouldn't be good enough for them.
You paint a very pretty picture. Well, you know, these guys, how do these guys make all the money they're making, Tom?
Well, again, it goes back to that partnership with corporations. Now that you've got government with the power to give corporations things they want, they are pouring money into their pockets, into these politicians. They own them. And no matter what you or I say, they go in and give them what they want. And that's this horrible marriage, this you know, government-sanctioned monopolies. And that's the partnership. That's the root of it. You do not ever want to have a partnership between private businesses and government, because you give private businesses the power of government, eminent domain, special tax privileges, and so forth, put out their competition out of business. There is no good side to this. This is bad news all the way around. Government's job should be able to protect the market so that private business can compete in the market against their competition and do what they do. But government should never get involved in the market because this is what you get.
I think any time you have a monopoly, and I keep going back to the phone companies because there was one phone company and the phone company had a monopoly, and making calls was very, very expensive. Once that was opened up and you started to get a little more competition, I mean, everybody's running around with cell phones. Everybody can pick up the phone and call. It's truly brought the world a whole lot closer. You don't have to mortgage your house to call the other side of town anymore.
Yeah, well, and you know, I'll tell you something else that maybe your listeners, their mouths will drop open at this point. Check history. You will never find a monopoly that existed in the free market. In every case, people will talk about Standard Oil and things like that. There weren't monopolies, and if they were, it was because government got involved. The auto industry sold its soul to government to get better highways. The railroads sold their soul to get right-of-ways to, you know, across private property, using government in every case, and in every case, government came back and bit them in the rear, controlling them. Now you've got the President of the United States deciding who's going to be the head of Chrysler Corporation. I mean, this is where we've come with this, but there has never been a monopoly in a free market. Can't be done, because competition will always take care of that. But when government's involved, and it starts to put in tax dollars or tax breaks or regulations or whatever,
absolutely,
then you've got a monopoly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, Tom, going back to your article, there were a few things that I highlighted, and I kind of want to touch a little bit on that. One of them is something that really is one of my pet peeves, and that is where you have all of this commonly owned property that is not maintained, even though you're double taxed and you're paying for it and all of that. And you're talking, going back to climate control and global warming and all of that nonsense. You said we can finally clean out the 10 feet of fuel on the bottom of the forests and prevent the massive forest fires. We can reestablish the timber industry and all the jobs that were killed. Elaborate a little bit on that. What's the deal there?
Well, I was painting our dream. if all these things, the timber industry, the mining industry, the oil industry, all these things have been killed under the guise of climate change and global warming, massive regulations. You had, you know, the environmentalists came up with a spotted owl to destroy the timber industry, saying that it was an endangered species, which it absolutely was not. They said that it was something that could only live in old-growth forest, meaning that it hadn't been cut, no trees were cut down there. We find spotted owls living under McDonald's signs and bridges. You know, that's just bogus. And in fact, some environmentalists said if it hadn't been for the spotted owl, we would have had to have invented him. Well, they actually did invent him. spotted owl is a subspecies of the Mexican spotted owl, and there are massive numbers of them. The only thing that cuts down their ability to grow is a food source. And as long as they got a bunch of mice and so forth in the forest, they live. So that is a totally bogus thing that they've used to cut down or to stop the timber industry. And once that is done, then you've lost jobs there. We're bringing the timber in from other parts of the world instead of our own. We are losing American jobs. Most of these cities up in the Washington, Oregon, Montana area lived off of timber mill or, you know, mills to process the wood. As there's no trees being cut, they go out of business. People lose their jobs. The town loses its tax base. The town goes out of business. It just ceases to exist. And all of this is connected to something called the Wildlands Project. It is now part of the Biodiversity Treaty out of the United Nations. But what it calls for is the rewilding of 50% of all the land in every state back to the way it was before Christopher Columbus stepped foot here. Let me repeat that. The Wildlands Project wants to, its goal is to rewild. In other words, get all human activity off of 50% of all the land in every single state in the United States. And this is what we call herding people off the land into human habitat areas. And when we used to say that 10 years ago, people scoffed. And, you know, how can you do that? Well, they do it by killing the timber industry and other industries. They do it by saying that you have to move streams that run through ranchers' property, that they have to push back 300 feet away from the stream. They can't have the cattle in the stream, so forth. So the farmer can't water his cattle. He goes out of business, and that land then reverts to wilderness. The timber industry reverts to wilderness. The mining industry reverts to wilderness. The town dies. People move to Los Angeles or, you know, some other big city, and that is how they herd them off the land. And there are just hundreds of these little tools they use, rails to trails. When, you know, the idea was they had these railroads that used to go through private property. There were leases for that, and it was supposed to revert back to the property owner, but after the railroads went out of business and they weren't using the lines anymore, these environmentalists got the idea that we take the rails out of there, we make trails out of them, and it'd just be a wonderful thing for the family and the kids to use to go out into the wilderness, forgetting the fact that it crossed private property. And then when they set up the rails, the trail, then they had to have a buffer area because you couldn't have anything built on that right next to the trail, so we'd have to have a buffer area. The buffer areas serve as pipelines to destroying private property and destroying development, and you know, that's how it's done over and over and over again. These kind of things are done. All sound very wonderful. Just let us all enjoy the wilderness, but that's how it's done.
But right now, we hear a lot from people. You know, the excuses for doing what we do is that we're running out of land. Yet in fact, we're only using something like 5% of the land we already have. 5%.
That's actually being expansive. You're really including everything. In the world, we are only using about 2.5% of it in massive use, like cities and so forth. You could take the entire population of the world and move them into the state of Texas, and they would live in a density capacity about the equal to Paris, France. Now, that means we are not overpopulating the world. But environmentalists say that some environmentalists say that the population of the world shouldn't be more than 250 million people. We have more than that in the United States today.
I know.
I mean, you know, some of them go that far. It's just ridiculous what they do. What you have are a bunch of people living in these massive cities, and as they're sitting in their cars trying to get home every night, they don't have enough roads because environmentalists wouldn't let them build any more roads, and they're these massive traffic jams. It's easy to convince them that smart growth is a good idea. We'll just, you know, get everybody out of their cars. Well, when you're sitting there frustrated, that sounds like a pretty good idea. Forget about the fact that in Montana, where there are 800,000 people, and you've got massive areas of nobody. This is craziness. You just, outside of those big cities, you've got big expanses of open land that we're not allowed to use anymore because that would hurt the environment.
Tom, I've spoken to people who are advocates of rezoning and rebuilding and new urbanism and smart growth and anti-sprawl and all of this. And you know, when you talk about, well, wait a minute, that's not going to ease traffic, they look at you, well, we don't intend to. So they're taking wider streets and they're narrowing them. I mean, we need more roads, but no, we're going to go smart growth. We're going to narrow them. We're taking regular streets and we're residential streets and we're narrowing them because we don't want cars on there anymore. How are people going to get back and forth? You can't have a train stop at every blooming house.
Well, see, they did this Portland, Oregon was the model for all this was supposed to be. And, they put in, rail lines and they were going to build houses close to the rail lines and they wouldn't have cars and so forth. And they put smart growth in place, and nobody could build outside of the area. What they found was now you had a shortage of property, so property went up in value to outlandish costs. People were not riding the trains anyway, because trains go in one direction and you might want to go in another. Carpooling doesn't work because maybe you can't find people going the same place you are. The freedom of the car is what allows us to have our free society. And what you find in these controlled communities, smart growth, is that prices go up, housing shortages exist. So we're going to talk about compassion for the poor. They haven't got a prayer of buying a house, if that's the case. And you end up with these high-rise buildings where you have stores on the bottom floor, you have offices in the middle, and homes on the top. People never get out of the building.
Yeah.
That's smart growth.
Yeah, that's smart growth.
Yeah.
And then you have planes flying into the buildings.
Yeah, right.
I had someone from the Urban Land Institute, and I said, are we going to start thinking things differently? Oh, I don't know, maybe. I think we did for about 5 minutes, and we're back to building these high-rises again.
Yeah.
And putting people up there, moldy condos up in the sky.
Yeah. Now we have to have a park down there on the ground so you can go outside and actually see grass. Meanwhile, we've got this massive area of this country where nothing is.
You know, when the suburbs started being built, people moved out to the suburbs because they wanted some elbow room. They wanted some place for the kids to run and play and have pets and learn how to be responsible for their animals. Now we're taking all of that away, and what you've got is you've got the government saying people are fat, they're obese, they're not getting enough. You know, we're blaming every ailment on the fact that we live in such sprawl. But look at what we're doing to our kids, Tom.
Sure.
There's no place for the kids. If you walk down some of these newly developed urbanist concept, have you been down there? Have you seen them? Not a blade of grass, sidewalks, narrow streets, nothing. There's no place for the kids.
Yeah.
There's no place for a little boy to run out and kick a football.
Yeah. And that's what I did when I was in school, young. I would come home, run in the house, throw my books down, and head out the door. We played baseball, football, we rode bikes, we played basketball. It's all the things we did constantly. We never stopped. I didn't have a computer. I didn't sit in front of that. But I heard a news report on the local D.C. NBC affiliate one night talking about these new developments where they had these big houses, but they were like 3 feet apart.
Yeah.
And these guys in this news report actually blamed the developer for that, saying that he was using all of his land. That was the way he's making more money, so he didn't have any space in him. They left out completely the part that the local visioning plan, the local regional government, made them do that because that is sustainable development. And they were talking about how dangerous they were because if one caught on fire, five of them burned because they were so close together. But that was the developer's greed. That was the reason for it, instead of the fact that this is actually mandated to them and the developer is doing what he's told to do.
And they're wrapping them in this vinyl siding that just goes up in 2 seconds flat. I mean, these houses really are going up. It's bad news, and it is a mandate.
Yeah.
It's the government mandate because they can cram more people into smaller spaces and collect bigger taxes and just shunt everything over onto the homeowners association. All of these have homeowners associations. All of them.
Yes. Yep.
And so it's a case of double taxation. It's a case of an extra layer of government. It's a case of, it's just unbelievable. Talk about going from crisis to crisis.
It's created crisis.
It is. It's manufactured, it's mandated, it's designed, it's there. And people have got to stop believing that it's protecting them and protecting property values, because it's not.
Yeah, there's this new crisis that's growing, that's banded here. First of all, General Electric and Sylvania were the first corporations I know of, except for DuPont, who actually went to government and got them to ban their own products so that they could create new ones. And these mercury-filled, environmentally friendly, supposedly, light bulbs that they're pushing on everybody now. Used to buy a incandescent bulb for 65 cents. Now, one of these green bulbs will cost you $3. or more. And plus they're filled with mercury, and they have not yet figured out. You cannot take those and throw them into your wastebasket like you could the incandescent bulbs and have them leave. They're going to have to be recycled somehow, and no one has addressed this and how it'll be done. But it's illegal to throw, you know, those kind of things into landfills.
So people go through your trash, huh, looking for stuff like that?
Of course they will. Of course they will.
How nice.
Yeah.
How would you like to go to college and qualify for going through the trash and looking for light bulbs that were thrown in?
Be a green engineer.
Yeah, there you go.
Green sanitation engineer. Yeah.
We're talking to Tom DeWeese. He's the founder and president of the Virginia-based American Policy Center, and the website is policycenter.org. Tom, we sort of teased the audience a little bit at the beginning about the water shortages, and you have quite a bit on that. We've got a few more minutes, so would you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. What I was talking about here, back in 2005, the United Nations had a conference in San Francisco, an environmental conference in which they invited mayors from all over the world to attend. And this was the beginning of the process to go around the federal government and to get local mayors to implement climate change legislation and impose sustainable development. And there were two documents that each mayor was to sign that would do this. One was called the Green Cities Declaration, in which they announced their intention to do all these things. And the second thing was the Urban Environmental Accords, in which this was the specific stuff. And one of the things they said they would do is every year they would ban something. They would find an item in the community, some kind of chemical or you know, some other item, and that they decided was dangerous, and they would ban it. Didn't matter if it was dangerous or not. They had to ban something to get, you know, and what they would get if they did all these things. They had 21 different things to do, like Agenda 21. If they did them all, they would get a plaque outside the city saying this is a sustainable community and, you know, a green community, all that crap. Anyway, one of the things that they agreed to do was to reduce water consumption by 10% by 2020. Now, the interesting thing here was that the UN began by stating, quote, cities with potable water consumption greater than 100 liters per capita per day will adopt and implement policies to reduce consumption by 10% by 2015. The interesting thing here is that a liter is only a quarter of a gallon. So what you're saying here is that people can only, first of all, only have 26 gallons a day to use for all their needs, to drink, to bathe, to wash your clothes, to water your lawn, if that's mandated by the Homeowners Association, to wash your car, to feed your pet, all that kind of 26 gallons a day. The truth of the matter is, this is a very clever use of the word liter, because the U.S. Geological Survey says Americans need 100 gallons of water to do all those kind of things.
So four times as much.
Four times as much. So what they were really doing here, saying they were going to reduce water usage by 10%, by using the word liter instead of gallon, what they were accomplishing was reducing water usage by 75%. So that's how they do these things.
That's unbelievable. And the cities are actually implementing this.
There are, yes, they are. There are now 600 communities in this country that are working towards, it's probably more than that. This is what we know about. And, by the way, water is not an international issue. Water is a very local issue. Either you live in an area that has plenty of water or you live in an area that doesn't. And that is a local issue. Somebody mandating from on high how much water you should use because you live, you know, if you live in an area that's flooded every year with huge amounts of water, and you're told you have to reduce your water usage because somebody lives in a desert, I mean, that is
that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and that's what they're doing. But they're making it an international issue. The Sierra Club is the NGO out of the United Nations that is given the mandate for water control. To getting control of the water, you control everything. Nobody can build, nobody can live without water, and that's what their goal is, to get control of the water, and then they can decide what the agendas will be. But that's, you know, that is that issue.
What's the rationale behind forcing people to ban something, a chemical? What's the sense there?
Well,
is there a sense? Is there some reason for it, logical reason, or?
Well, what they're saying is that all these chemicals and compounds and so forth that we use are all dangerous. Industry is dangerous. We've got to stop industry. And if the, you know, every year, we don't want to do it too radically, or that might destroy the economy too quickly. So we'll do it a little bit at a time. And this comes from a mindset that everything we do is dangerous. Everything man does is, you know, a bad thing for the environment. And to cut our carbon footprint, then we've got to cut these things out. And so they get the mayors, you know, they get incentives, they get awards for doing this stuff. And what you literally do is you end up having the mayor agree to ban something every year, even if they don't have something to ban. That's what they'll do.
They'll find something.
Yeah. And here, let me just say this. Since I've been a bit of a curmudgeon so far, let me make sure I'm really a curmudgeon. We're told now that in order to live in our society, it is absolutely necessary that everybody cut their carbon footprint. Well, I'm working to increase my carbon footprint, because the larger my carbon footprint is, the better my life is, the more healthy my life is, the more prosperous my life is. And let me just add this to those who are now in total shock. If you have no carbon footprint, you are dead.
And that's an excellent, excellent point to end on. Tom, Tom, thank you very much for joining us today. I always appreciate you putting us in the big picture, because that's exactly where we belong. We're sort of too myopic, and I think we waste a lot of energy just trying to plug a single hole instead of looking at the big picture. But thank you for providing that for us.
Stop letting people push you around.
I agree with you. In your paper, you said the politics of climate change and sustainable development are not about a clean environment, conservation, or good stewardship. They're about the politics of control, and you were absolutely right on that.
That's what it is.
That's what it is. Thank you so much, Tom. Enjoy your lunch.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later.
My pleasure. Thanks,
you. Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid. All your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.